Let's pray. Lord, I ask that you speak to us tonight, that you show us a little bit in terms of how we can get ourselves into trouble, but also how sometimes just the things that happen to us propel us into those kinds of situations. So I ask that you take the stuff that I do tonight, and as we look at this scripture, may it be give us lessons for life. In Jesus' name, amen. We started last week on dealing with chapter 27, I think it was. And we actually looked at the how he descended into despair and all that went with it. And David was forced into it. Tonight, I want to look at two stories. Basically, we're only going to see one side of it. But if you take the 1 Samuel chapter 27 and then chapters 29 and 30 of 1 Samuel, what you see is the story of David near the end of his period of time as in exile, you might say. In the midst of that, or you might say like, well, meanwhile, back at the ranch, in chapters 28 and chapter 31, which is the end of 1 Samuel, these are the stories that have to do with what was going on with Saul at the same time that David was experiencing his struggle in the world that he went into. We're really looking at David's, but I want you to keep in mind that chapter 28 and chapter 31 are meanwhile back at the ranch kind of thing. Like if you're watching a movie and you see one thing happening and then they switch to a different scene with different people and stuff and that's happening then. I want you to keep that in mind as we go through this. We're going to look at where David goes into the world, and by the way, that he changed it up there. It goes into the world. That was my mistake. I found that earlier. So we're going to look at these stories side by side, but I can only do one at a time, so that's because God created time, so everything doesn't happen at once. So that's why we're going to do that. So I'm going to walk through tonight with chapter 27 to chapter 28, verse 2. And we covered a little bit of chapter 27 last week, but mainly in the idea of where David was mentally or spiritually, you might say. But he's going into the world. So I'm going to go to, and David said in his heart, I shall now perish one day by the hand of Saul. There is nothing better for me than I should escape to the land of the Philistines. Then Saul will despair of seeking me any longer within the borders of Israel, and I shall escape out of his hand. That one verse really tells you that David was going to go into the world. In the Bible, both the Philistines and Egypt have always been a picture of going into the world. And when I say he's going into the world, he's a man who is just, he's had it up to here with all kinds of things that have happened to him, and he's running away, and he's running into the world as a spiritual person. Because he's the man after God's own heart, but he has decided that he's going to take on the world and live in the world and rely on himself and the strength of his hand, and that's where he's going at this point in time. And we talked a long time about that particular verse last week, so you can get that CD out there or go online. So verse 2 and 3, so David arose and went over, he and the 600 men who were with him, to Achish, the son of Maach, king of Gath. And David dwelt with Achish at Gath, he and his men, every man with his household, and David with his two wives, Ahinoam of Jezreel, and Abigail of Carmel, Nabal's widow. And when it was told Saul that David had fled to Gath, he sought for him no more. In other words, Saul went after doing other things. What you see in these verses 2 and 3, is that this principle is present. Wherever you go, you take people with you. David is the one who is running away from Israel. He's running away from Saul. But what he's got is he's got this entourage of about 600 men and their wives and all their stuff. And what he does is he runs into the world and he takes his business and he takes his family with him. Everybody goes with him. So it's not just David running away in terms of that. And that is a principle of life that you can take to the bank. If you are the influence in somebody's life, if you've got kids, if you're in a business and you do it, wherever you go, they go with you. As goes the leadership, so go the people. And I'm here to tell you that we know these things if we think about them. We've got multiple examples around us all the time. But you may be the head of your household. Even if you're an individual, even if you're single, wherever you go, you take people with you. All you have to do is look at the state of Illinois. As goes the leadership, so goes the people. I wouldn't say that this is the paradise of all states. I don't know about you, but that's just where I am. And they follow him, all these people who he is influencing over, and they go with him. And so when he makes wrong decision, when David makes the wrong decisions, hey, he's taking them with him. When you make wrong decisions, if you got people around you that you influence or kids in the family, when you make wrong decisions, guess what? You take them with you. I know as pastor of this church and the leadership of this church, as goes the leadership, so go the people. If your leadership makes bad decisions and takes you down a road that we shouldn't go, hey, guess what? That's what happens. The other side of that coin is true as well. If you make the right decisions, you take people with you. But the difference between the blessings and the curses is that curses are always loud and blessings are always quiet. That's why we're always told to count our blessings, because they don't make a lot of racket at us. But you take people with you. It's not just you. And that's what he does in verse 2 and 3. And when he does this, verse 4 is that Saul, the guy that's after him, says, okay, I'm going to quit following him. And so Gath becomes David's home. Now, you know where Gath is, don't you? Who came out of Gath? Goliath. The Philistines. These are Philistines that he's going into. So he's going into the world. He's going away from his spiritual life and the spiritual nature of who he is. Now, that's what's happening. And what you get from that is that, first off, you get a false sense of security sometimes. You know, you can go into the world. Hey, if you're doing work for God and you're getting all kinds of trouble from that, people are trying to persecute you or afflict you because, hey, this guy's God's man or God's woman here. And so, you know, hey, I'll go into the world and act like them. They won't know. They'll leave me alone. And so he gets a false sense of security because he doesn't have Saul after him anymore at this point. You know, I talked last week about my trip to Panama City Beach at one time in terms of how I just wanted to get away and I didn't want to be seen as a pastor because, God, every time that people find out I'm a pastor, all the blue smoke comes up and everything. And just sometimes you just don't want to be that. Sometimes I just don't want to be God's man. Just leave me alone. Well, that's what you do sometimes when you go into the world. And people talk about backsliding, but I don't think it's really not backsliding. It's just going into the world. And we do it regularly. And so David decides, I've got to get away from all this affliction because of who I am. As God's man, and that's who he is, as God's man, he goes away to get into the world, and he gets a false sense of security as he goes there. Verses 5 to 7, then David said to Achish, if I have found favor in your eyes, let a place be given me in one of the country towns that I may dwell there. For why should your servant dwell in the royal city with you? So that day Achish gave him Ziklag. Therefore, Ziklag has belonged to the kings of Judah to this day, And that's a side note. And the number of the days that David dwelt in the country of the Philistines was 1 year and 4 months. So he goes into the world, you might say, for 16 months. Now, he becomes the servant of Achish. And the name of the place that he goes to is Ziklag. By the way, that sometimes it's wise to look up the meanings of names, because sometimes these names have, that word means winding or bending, like a river bends and weaves and goes the way that is easiest. That's why rivers don't run straight. They go the easy way in terms of how they run downhill. And so they are winding and bending. And Ziklag means that. And David is basically doing that with his life. He's going with the world at this point, and he's just going wherever it leads him in terms of that. And no longer is he on the straight and narrow. No longer is he God's man, or at least he's not appealing to God at all. And I know people do this regularly in terms of they give up their spiritual life for a time, sometimes for a long time. But what we do is we go with the world. And like a river, we wind and bend around and we move along and we just keep doing that. Now, and when you do that, you may be in the world for a long time. And there are a lot of things that can happen to you while you're in the world moving away from what God wants you to be. And you'll notice here that David doesn't do this for a week or two. He does it for 16 months. And one of the things that I've found about people is you can give into the world. You can literally go into the world with your life, but you may not step out of it right away. You may spend a lot of time there. You know, the parable of the prodigal son, basically he went into the world, lost his inheritance and everything, ends up eating the same things that pigs eat. He finally came to himself. And he says, I don't need to be here. But sometimes we'll spend a lot of time in the working with the pigs, you might say, in terms of this work. We'll go with the flow. You know, in the Bible, there are a lot of instances where people do that. Abraham, a man after God's own heart himself, he was God's friend. If you read the story of Abraham, he does what God tells him to do, except one time he goes down to Egypt. He says, I'm going to Egypt. He takes all his family with him. He almost loses his wife in the midst of all that. And then he does it a second time later on. And he goes into the world. Lot, who was Abraham's nephew, went to Sodom. He almost lost his life when God took him out. He was only saved because of Abraham's prayers. But he went into the world. David's here 16 months. By the way, there are no psalms in the book of Psalms attributed to David during this time. He was not singing. His heart was away from God for 16 months. If you turn to 1 Samuel chapter 29, verses 2 and 3, which is also part of this story, it says, this is when the Philistines were getting ready to go to war against Saul. It says, as the lords of the Philistines were passing on by hundreds and by thousands, and David and his men were passing on in the rear with Achish, the commanders of the Philistines says, what are these Hebrews doing here? And Achish said to the commanders of the Philistines, is not this David, the servant of Saul, king of Israel, who has been with me now for days and years, he says, and since he deserted, note the word, he deserted to me. I have found no fault in him to this day. So in other words, he's even described by the Philistines, by the people of the world. He says, this guy's a deserter. The world judges us, by the way. You know, I know I've I've had people who have gone, who have been strong Christian people in terms of their life, and then, for some reason, sometimes it's external, comes at them from outside and just nails them and puts them down, they go into the world. Sometimes we just wander into the world. Sometimes we do it deliberately. But no matter how we get into the world rather than into our spiritual life, you know, what happens is the world knows this about you. Isn't that guy he said he was a Christian. What's he doing here? Is he trying to be like us? That's what the Philistines are. Is he trying to be like us? He's a Jew. He's from Israel. What's he doing here? In fact, he's supposed to have killed bunches of us. And they knew, and they called him what he was. He's a deserter. And those kinds of Christians can give the church a lot of grief just because of that. And so he does that. Back on chapter 27. By the way, when David goes to live in Ziklag, he's trying to get away from all the influence of the world. He's trying to get away out into the country. He's trying to get to someplace quiet. But that's what's going on. Verses 8 and 9. Now David and his men went up and made raids upon the Gezerites, the Gerzites, and the Amalekites, and the Termites, and they're not in there. They were back in the woods someplace. For these were the inhabitants of the land from of old, as far as Shur to the land of Egypt. And David smote the land and left neither man nor woman alive, but took away the sheep, the oxen, the asses, the camels, and the garments, and came back to Achish. Now, what he's doing is, David's going out and making raids on different groups. And there's some duplicity and deception that is going on. He cannot really deny that he is a Jew. He cannot deny that he's an Israelite. So inside of himself, he knows who he is, but he's trying to live in the world. Sometimes we as Christians do the same thing. We may, decide that we want to try to pick up the lifestyle of the world again, and we want to fit into the world around us. We don't want people making funny faces at us or anything like that. And that's what we do. And that's what David and his guys are doing. And who is he attacking? Well, he is attacking the enemies of Israel. These are neutral people to the Philistines. Okay? They're not the allies of the Philistines. They're just neutral groups of people out there. So David is fighting with border tribes, you might say. Then, verses 10 and 11, he killed everything. You notice in verse 9, he kills all the people. God's not talking to him at this point in time either. You need to understand that. God is not talking to him, and he is not talking to God. And he smote the land. He left neither man nor woman alive. He took all their stuff, but he killed all the people. When Achish asked, "Against whom have you made a raid today?" David would say, "Against the Negev of Judah." That's Israelites. "Or against the Negev of the Jeremelites." Or against the Negev of the Kenites, who were actually allies of Israel. And David said, "Neither man nor woman alive to bring tidings to Gath, thinking lest they should tell about us and say, 'So David has done.'" What he's dealing in here is deception, duplicity, you might say. Inside, he's a Jew. He's God's man. He's a man after God's own heart. He's part of God's people, the Israelites. But he becomes very vague in his reporting to Achish. And he does that in terms of his actions. And so he's not just, He killed everything. Why? Because he doesn't want anybody coming back and telling the Achish what he's really doing out there. He veils his answer. He implies that he's killing Israelites, but he's not. And what he's doing is he's trying to play both sides of the game, you might say. Such was his custom, this is in verse 11, all the while he dwelt in the country of the Philistines. This is the way he dealt with things the whole time he was out there in the world. Veiled things he would say, he veiled his answer, he was vague in what he was doing. And verse 12 says, and Achish trusted David, thinking he has made himself utterly abhorred by his people Israel. Therefore he shall be my servant always. One of the things that we do, and we can do it, when you go into the world, you say, basically, you don't really always come right out and say it, but you say, you know, I'm tired of my Christian life. I don't want to do this. And so what we do is we go into the world around us. And but you know back in the deep down inside, you said, you know, I know who I'm supposed to be. And so when you're playing both sides of the coin, you might say, what we do is we will veil our answers about things. You were here last week when I told you about that Panama City Beach incident of mine. I was veiling my answers. I wasn't speaking lies. I was just not speaking with all the facts. And that's what David's doing here, and that's what we do too. We will veil our actions and our life because we know we're not supposed to be here, but we know we don't want to be here as well. And so here we are. So, and people do this all the time. We do this all the time. You know, as a pastor of a church, I take tours in people's lives, and I watch how people move around in terms of the field of endeavors that are out there, the world that's around it. And people do it all the time. And another thing about you people, you think I'm stupid, don't you? I mean, you won't come right out and say that, but you think pastors are basically stupid and we don't know what you're doing. Like I'm some kind of wooden boy up here, Pinocchio, you know, or I was conceived on a rock and hatched by the sun at the age of 30 into the ministry, and there was never, ever a real life that went with it. People do it to me all the time. They play games. You know, I can go visit somebody in a house, and if they know I'm coming, they always clean the place up. True story. When I was probably 7, 8 years old, I don't know, maybe 9, my grandparents lived in Bloomington, and my parents sometimes took us up there, and they would babysit us, basically. And one day, my brother and I were playing cards on the floor, and my grandmother got up and ran as fast as she could and grabbed those cards and took them away from us. And we go, what's going on? About that time, there's a knock on the door, and they live right across the street from a Methodist church, and the Methodist minister was at the door. I always remember that. It's, you know, it's one of those I can see it to this day. I said, what is this all about? And she was just hiding the cards so that the Methodist minister wouldn't be able to see him. You know, and my grandparents were, on my mother's side, were not. They weren't Christian. I don't know where they ended up, actually, basically. If they were to go to church, they would have probably gone to that Methodist church across the street. If they had gotten sick and went into the hospital, they would have somebody had asked them and said, where do you go to church? They would probably put down that Methodist church. If they were ever to go to church, that would be the place they would go. But I remember that, and I said, what's wrong with them? You know? But they were hiding the cards so the minister wouldn't think poorly of them. David is here. He's deceiving the world. He wasn't living as one of God's people at this time, but he was deceiving the world. He was AWOL. He was a deserter from God's people. And he was dealing in duplicity. He kills everything, and he does it to cover up the fact that he doesn't want to kill the actual Israelites that are out there. So he doesn't want any witnesses. I'm not stupid, people. Just remember that. First off, there's a real boy up here, so I know how we are. And enough of you have said on Sunday morning, he says, that was right for me. Actually, I'm just looking in my windows and showing you stuff of my house, you might say. And you say, oh, my God, how does he know that? So David does this. It's deception. By the way, in the Garden of Eden, you have a very good understanding of what sin is and how it works. What they did was they ate of the fruit of the tree of knowledge of good and evil. That was the sin because God had said, don't eat of that tree. The first thing that happens after that is then they hide it. They hide the sin. They go hiding in the Garden of Eden because they think God can't find us if we go hiding. And what we do is we will commit sin and we will hide it. Oh, it's as simple as hiding the wrapper on the chocolate. Or that one cigarette that we took. I mean, that's what we do. We hide it. And then if we get caught, we lie about it. Not me. I didn't do that. I'm blaming the woman. That's what Adam did. And what we do is we lie about it. And this is the way it goes. And that's what David did. His sin is really against his spiritual nature of who he is. He has been anointed king of Israel. He is God's man. And he has gone into the world. And basically he is lying about everything. He's dealing in deception at this point because he doesn't want anybody to know who he really is. But he can't do it completely. So he's like a guy with his foot in two different boats, and the boats are beginning to slide apart. And that's where he is. But he's in the world. He deals in secrecy. And by the way, the other thing about this is Achish trusted David. That's what it says in verse 12. Achish trusted David. Why does he trust him? Well, one of the reasons that he trusts him is that David is that kind of guy. In reality, in his heart, he wants to be honest and have integrity. And so he does this, and Achish buys the whole program. You know? And sometimes we do the same thing, and somebody will buy it, you know? If you're committing sin and you hide it and you get found out about it and you lie about it, hey, I'm here to tell you that what happens is some people believe you because they believe that that's the way you really are. And that's what was going on here. Now, if you turn over to chapter 29, and we're skipping 28 because that's the other side of the story. That's meanwhile back at the ranch. That's Saul's story, okay? And he's a man after the flesh, and Dave is a man after God's spirit. But we have to switch, and I can only do one of these guys at once. In chapter 29, verses 1 to 3, and what's happening here is they're getting ready to go to war against the Israelites and Saul. And I read verses 3 a few minutes ago. Now the Philistines gathered all their forces at Aphek, and the Israelites were encamped by the fountain, which is in Jezreel. So you see they're going against the Jewish people. Here, as the lords of the Philistines were passing on by hundreds and by thousands, and David and his men were passing on in the rear with Achish. So in other words, they're getting ready to go to war against the Israelis. David's in with the enemy of the Israelis, the commanders, and that's where the commanders of the Philistines said, what? Is not this day? What are these Hebrews doing here? And Achish said to the commanders of the Philistines, is not this David, the servant of Saul, king of Israel, who's been with me for days and years? Well, it's not been years, but it's been a year and 4 months. And since he deserted to me, I have found no fault in him to this day. And he didn't find any fault in him. But there is sin going on. And the sin that is going on is on the inside of David. The real injury is taking place inside of him. And that's what's going on here. So when you look at this, he says, what happens is he's bringing turmoil upon himself. Verses 4 through 7 in chapter 29. But the commanders of the Philistines were angry with him, and the commanders of the Philistines said to him, send the man back, that he may return to the place to which you have assigned him. He shall not go down with us to battle, lest in the battle he become an adversary to us. For how could this fellow reconcile himself to his Lord? Would it not be with the heads of the men here? Is not this David, of whom they sing to one another in dances? Saul has slain his 1,000 and David his 10,000s. Then Achish called David and said to him, as the Lord lives, you have been honest. And to me it seems right that you should march out and in with me in the campaign. For I have found nothing wrong in you from the day of your coming to me to this day. Nevertheless, the Lord's do not approve of you. So go back now and go peaceably, that you may not displease the lords of the Philistines. Now, what he's doing is, he is being exposed here for who he really is. That's what's going on. And Achish, in this study, David is a man after God's own heart, and the issue that is God's is the same as David's. And God's issue is loyalty. We call it faithfulness, but it's really loyalty. Are you going to be loyal to God or not with your life? We can say faithfulness, be faithful or not. You know, if you're married, are you going to be loyal to your spouse? You know, it's that kind of thing, faithfulness. One thing about David is he is loyal, and he has given himself to Achish. Even though inside of him, he is secretly doing other things around him in terms of this kind of stuff. And it's almost like he's God's secret agent. By the way, I've had more than one person who has been in the world, and they have used that terminology to me, that they're God's secret agent out there. And all I want to say is that's crap. You can't live that way and be true to God. Anyway, that's what he's basically, he has been very loyal to Achish. And Achish understands that. He accepts that part of his character. That is the character of David. He is loyal. But the world around him doesn't trust him. And even, you know, Israel is without him. He's over here with the Philistines, getting ready to go to battle with them. But even Achish calls a spade in verse 3. He says, you're a deserter. You came over here and I have nothing against you, but you are a deserter. And that's what he does. He's a man in two worlds. Verse 8 in chapter 29. And David said to Achish, but what have I done? What have you found in your servant from the day I entered your service until now that I may not go and fight against the enemies of my lord the king? And Achish made answer to David, I know that you are as blameless in my sight as an angel of God. Nevertheless, the commanders of the Philistines have said, he shall not go up with us to the battle. what's going on here? Well, if you remember back when David killed Goliath, and then he started working for King Saul, and he was out there fighting the battles of King Saul and Israel and everything, and Saul got jealous and envious, and he had a bad spirit in him, and he starts throwing spears at him, and then he takes his household, and he takes his wife, and he runs him all over the country, and he's been doing this now for probably close to 12 years. David said at one point in time to Saul, "What have I done?" And the truth is, nothing. He has done nothing to deserve the kind of treatment that he is getting. Even in this place, he does not deserve that kind of treatment because he has done nothing to deserve that kind of treatment. But there are consequences when you try to live someplace that you are not supposed to be. If you're God's man or woman in this world, and you go out there and you try to live in the world around you, and you just be God's secret agent or whatever you want to call it, or you want to go back to the world after being his man or woman within the context of the spiritual boundaries that we have, and you're going to go out there, people are going to know, for one thing. There's consequences to actions, too. He is a man without a place. His identity is one of God's people. But he's out there with the world, and he's functioning in the world. But he is a displaced man. He's neither fish nor fowl, you might say. And I see people who have come in and become God's people. Once you were no people, now you are God's people, so act like it. That's basically what God says, by the way. But what they do is they go back into the world, and they go out there, and they do this all the time, and they are like a person standing in two boats. They are like a person without a country. They don't fit, you might say. And yet they try to live, and some of them describe it, I'm a secret agent. You know. If you are God's man or woman, and I don't know when that happens to you, but whenever you receive Jesus as your Savior and you begin that journey of making him Lord of your life, that's when it hits, that's when you became God's man or God's woman. And if you are God's man or woman and you're out there in the world playing the world games, there will come points of time when you will ask questions like this. Who am I really? Because it will just drive you crazy. It's a dichotomy of thinking, and it's not the same. And you'll ask, what am I about, really? Who am I, really? You know, am I part of the world here, or am I God's? Where do I belong as a person? And then also the question is laying around in the back of your mind, where's my allegiance? Where's my allegiance? And David is in that kind of place right now. He's out there in the world trying to play the world games, and the world has come to realize, hey, you don't fit here. And he's displaced. You don't fit. There comes dissatisfaction on the inside. And disillusionment begins to happen as well because, well, you're neither fish nor fowl, so what are you doing out here anyway? In verses 8 and 9, they tell him that. He says, you know, Achish says, you have never done a thing to me. I have nothing against you. But all these people, the rest of the company, you might say, the rest of the business, they don't trust you. Because they know that if push comes to shove, you might just turn around and join the other side. There's dissatisfaction with it, disillusionment. Verses 10 and 11. You notice Achish says, hey, man, in my sight, you're like an angel of God. Now, but Achish says, now then, rise early in the morning with the servants of your Lord who came with you. And start early in the morning. That's the reason being, you need to get out of here now. Because this can end badly right here. And depart as soon as you have light. So David set out with his men early in the morning to return to the land of the Philistines, but the Philistines went up to Jezreel. And they're going to go to war, okay? But David is being sent back to where he was living by Achish in terms of that. There's distrust, there's disrespect. He's rejected because he really is part of God's people. He just doesn't want to do that. And he can't be both, and the world didn't want him. That's what's going on here. By the way, if you back up what I looked at chapter 27, as goes the leadership, so go the people. You notice that he says, "You, David, you take all your people and you go back and get out of here." And so once again, as leader, he leads his people, and this time he leads them away because they're being rejected by this. Chapter 30, verses 1 to 3. Now, picture, when you're thinking about David, think about him. He is a man who is displaced. He is a man who is suffering from distrust, and he is rejected. Very much the same as it happened when he was with God's people, and that's where he is at this point in time. He cannot find his place because God has not given him his place yet. Sometimes that's where we are. We may feel out of place because we are out of place. You can be in the world and be out of place, but you might be out of place even in the context of God's people until that comes to print, into your vision where you're supposed to be. Anyway, picture him. Here he is again, leading people. He's the influence that drives them. And as goes the leadership, so go the people. Verses 1 to 3. Now when David and his men came to Ziklag, that's that winding, bending place, on the third day, I don't know how many times, 30 days means something. And if you were at the closing at the men's weekend, I told you about 3 days. If you came here on Maundy Thursday, 3 days means something. It's because God is God of 3 days. Now, when David and his men came to Ziklag on the third day, the Amalekites had made a raid upon the Negev and upon Ziklag. They had overcome Ziklag and burned it with fire, and taken captive the women and all who were in it, both small and great. They killed no one, but carried them off and went their way. And when David and his men came to the city, they found it burned with fire, and their wives and sons and daughters taken captive. Now, these 600 men that were with him have families. They are all, by the way, rejects from Saul, and they follow David in terms of this sin. And so they come over the hill on the third day after leaving the battles near Jezreel. And what do they find? David finds his home burned. He's lost his job again. This time he's lost his home and family again. All the families of the people that are under him, that he has influence over, that he's the leader over, all these families have been captured. Now, I want you to hear this. They have been captured by the world. And sometimes I see some of God's people lose their families because they get captured by the world. Verses 4 to 6, then David and the people who were with him raised their voices and wept until they had no more strength to weep. David's two wives also had been taken captive, Ahinoam of Jezreel, and Abigail, the widow of Nabal of Carmel. And David was greatly distressed, for the people spoke of stoning him, because all the people were bitter in soul, each for his sons and daughters. But David strengthened himself in the Lord his God. Here he is. He's the leader of these people. And he brings them back. And all these guys that have been with him, and they have been with him for probably close to 10 years, a lot of them. So they have families and people around them. And they come over the hill, and they find the place burned to the ground. And the guys with him, these guys had, remember, David had made the mistake. He went into the world. And when he went into the world, he took the people with him. It seems to me that the guys that are with him, these 600 warriors, had had it with him at that point. Because they talk about stoning David for their troubles. I have come to the conclusion, I've walked this earth for quite a while, and I think you can take this one to the bank. I've never seen this written down as a principle anywhere, but I think it is. If you act like an idiot, even your friends will walk away from you. Over a period of time, if you continue to act like an idiot, they will disassociate themselves from you. Think about these men. These guys have stuck with David through thick and thin when he was doing the God thing, you might say, playing Robin Hood out in the thing and running from Saul and all that. But they stuck with him while he was doing the things that God had shown him to do with his life in the boundaries of the kingdom, you might say. And in tough times, they were there. They stuck with him in all the things that they, but now these guys are hacked off at David. And the reason is David has led them astray. He has taken them from Israel and gone into the land of the Philistines just to avoid the conflicts of being part of God's people. And they finally said, I'm done. And they're about ready to stone the man. And he is in the pits at that point in time. In verse 6, though, there is an important sentence. It says, but David strengthened himself in the Lord his God. You can write that one down, and you can put your own name in there if you want to. And Jack strengthened himself in the Lord his God. It's been 16 months that he's been out there fooling around in the world, trying to act like the people of the world and doing all this stuff. And suddenly he comes to the realization that this is not working for me. And he looks up for the first time in 16 months. Verses 7 and 8. And David said to Abiathar, the priest, that, by the way, they've got a priest with them. As a group, Abiathar, the son of Ahimelech, bring me the ephod. In other words, he says, I got to put on the garments that go with who I am. So Abiathar brought the ephod to David, and David inquired of the Lord, shall I pursue after this man? Shall I overtake them? And he answered him, pursue, for you shall surely overtake and shall surely rescue. His men are ready to stone the man. And he comes to his senses and he turns his life towards God again after 16 months. And by the way, what he does here, and this is true of all of us to a certain extent, sometimes our only counsel is God. We can talk to our friends. We can talk to mentors. We can talk to wise people we know in terms of things. But sometimes we have to just come to the realization, I need to talk to God about things. And that's what David is, because he's the leader, for one thing. And the leader doesn't have anybody else to talk to. It's kind of like Moses. Moses didn't have, the reason he complained to God is he didn't have anybody else to complain to, because everybody else complained to him. He's alone in this, even though he's got a whole entourage with him. There's nobody to counsel him. All the crutches are taken away. His strength has been drained from him. He has been stripped again of the things of this world, his family and their families and all that, the relationships. He is alone in the midst of people. And he finally looks up. He finally gets off the horizontal focus of always looking at the world just in terms of this, and he finally looks up in terms of it. One of the things about this stuff that I kind of like here is that God doesn't paint his people as perfect. Have you noticed that? You can't really take this, and you can't take this Bible story into a group of 7-8-year-olds. This is adult stuff. I mean, we tell the story of Goliath and all that about how David did all this, but we've been walking with this guy when he's been beat, had the snot beat out of him. And he's been making his own problems in the last 16 months. And so he finally gets down on his knees and he says, okay, Lord, what do I do? Do I go after these people or not? What do I do? And he decides, because God tells him to, go after them. Verses 9 and 10. So David set out, and the 600 men who were with him, and they came to the brook Besor, and where those stayed who were left behind. But David went on with the pursuit, he and 400 men. 200 stayed behind, who were too exhausted to cross the brook, Besor. Now, when I read this, I said, okay, why are 200 of these guys not in too good a shape? I don't know if you think about that, but I think about things like that. I got a feeling, you know, grief will literally drain you, and stresses of life will take it out of you. I've got a sneaking suspicion that this 200 group of men were the ones who had more of the families and stuff. And they were so distraught and distressed by the whole thing that they were already exhausted just because of all the emotional stress they were going through. And so they went with David, but when they got to this river, they said, God, we're dying here. And they're probably so drained physically from all the emotion of the burned city and all the families being taken that they couldn't. They said, we got to stop. That's all it is. And I really do believe that that is. I think the other 400 probably didn't have the families, maybe at least most of them probably didn't have the families, so they weren't thinking about that from that kind of emotional stress. At least that's what I think. I don't know. There's nothing to tell you that. But I think that goes on. So they stayed. 200 of them stayed on the one side of that brook. Verses 11 to 15. They found an Egyptian in the open country and brought him to David. And they gave him bread and he ate. And they gave him water to drink. And they gave him a piece of cake of figs and two clusters of raisins. And when he had eaten, his spirit revived. For he had not eaten bread or drunk water for 3 days and three nights. And David said to him, to whom do you belong? And where are you from? And he said, I am a young man of Egypt, servant to an Amalekite, and my master left me behind because I fell sick 3 days ago. We have made a raid upon the Negev of the Cherethites and upon that which belongs to Judah, and upon the Negev of Caleb, and we burned Ziklag with fire. And David said to him, will you take me down to this band? And he says, swear to me by God that you will not kill me or deliver me into the hands of my master, and I will take you down to this band. A couple of things here that if you just read it and it's just think of it on a horizontal level only, you know, so they find this guy and he's out there in the wilderness someplace and he's been sick and so he's not there. But what you also get here is that David's going after these people, but he doesn't know where they are. And God delivers to him information. I don't know how many times in my life when I've been in the battles of life, you might say, that God will deliver the right information. And in this case, it's just this Egyptian slave that is there, and out of an act of kindness, he gets the information about where this band is. Not only that, but the guy's going to lead him there. It's almost like the word of knowledge that you read about in terms of the gifts of the Spirit. He is given information. And when you're in the battles of life, let me tell you something. Information is very important because it gives you direction in where you should place your battle towards. Because a lot of times we'll go fighting all kinds of what I call shadows. We'll shadow box things that are not really there. And so David gets the information, and God gives him that information. And we don't know what kind of, we also don't know about that slave's life, do we? I always think about that. This is David's story, so he's the star, you might say. But there's a guy who has been a slave of these people that are burning things and doing all this stuff. And he gets left behind because he gets sick. And he ends up helping David. I wonder how his life is after this. We aren't really sure, but I bet you 2 bits he's not a slave anymore. What do you think? Verses 16 to 20. And when he had taken him down, behold, they were spread abroad over all the land, eating and drinking and dancing because of all the great spoil they had taken from the land of the Philistines and from the land of Judah. And David smote them from twilight until the evening of the next day, and not a man of them escaped except 400 young men who mounted camels and fled. David recovered all that the Amalekites had taken, and David rescued his 2 wives. Nothing was missing. Whether small or great, sons or daughters, spoil or anything that had been taken. David brought back all. David also captured all the flocks and herds, and the people drove those cattle before him and said, this is David's spoil. Now, first off, there's in strategic battles and things, surprise is very important. In the battles of life, sometimes surprise is very important. And we may not be fighting physically, but we might be fighting spiritually or emotionally. And sometimes surprise is very important because it throws the enemy into panic. And notice what time of day it was when he attacked. Just when it was getting dark. And he fought them all night long. And he knew what he was doing and they didn't know what was happening. And notice also, his family had been taken captive by the world, but God delivers all of them through his actions and all these people, and there was not one person who was missing or dead. All the stuff that was taken from them was restored. And on top of that, David and those men were given the spoils of the battle, which was the other places that these people had attacked and done damage to and destroyed. So in other words, not only was everything restored to David and the people that are around him, but they are also given the spoils or They have been given other things besides what they went into it with. But people being people, verses 21, then David came to the 200 men who had been too exhausted to follow David and who had been left at the brook Besor, and they went out to meet David and to meet the people who were with him. And when David drew near to the people, he saluted them. Then all the wicked and base fellows among the men who had gone with David said, because they did not go with us, we will not give them any of the spoil which we have recovered, except that each man may lead away his wife and children and depart. But David said, you shall not do so, to my brothers, with what the Lord has given us. He has preserved us and given into our hand the band that came against us. Who would listen to you in this matter? For as his share is who goes down into the battle, so shall his share be who stays by the baggage. They shall share alike. In other words, doesn't matter what part of the army you're in, you get part of what's going on in terms of this. Doesn't matter if you're back at camp or whether you're actually in the battle. And from that day forward, he made it a statute and ordinance for Israel to this day. Now, once again, David is described as a man after God's own heart. And the essence of that means that he was loyal. He was loyal to Saul until his death. And we haven't seen Saul's death yet, in spite of what a jerk Saul was to him and an evil person to him. He was loyal to Achish. He's loyal to his own men. And he says, you're not going to do it. And he says, and there's always people among us who are base or wicked. And wicked isn't necessarily evil, by the way. Wicked can be twisted, because that's what, when you make a wicker chair, what you do is you twist things to make it shape the way you want it. And they're wicked. They're twisted in some form or fashion. But they're also base people who they don't think about anybody but themselves in reality. And they may follow David, but they are not David. And David says, you're not going to do this. I am loyal to these people. These people are loyal to me. And they're going to get their share of whatever comes their way. And he made a law that day, a statute and an ordinance for Israel. Now, he wasn't the king yet, but he was going to be. The exhausted and grieved, I swear, I think those are the people that probably had people that were taken in. They just couldn't hack it emotionally. Verses 22 to 25, we've just done that. It's all not just about the fighters. It's about the people that are backing us up in terms of things. Every time I do a great banquet, I know that the real warriors on those weekends are the ones sitting at the table. The rest of us are just kind of like the guys that take care of the baggage in a lot of ways. And I know that. And you know, you got to take care of the fighters, but everybody's involved. And everybody gets some of what the reward is at the end of the weekend. Verses 26 to 31. When David came to Ziklag, he sent part of the spoil to his friends, the elders of Judah. By the way, Judah was attacked, were they not? Saying, here is a present for you from the spoil of the enemies of the Lord. It was for those in Bethel, in Ramoth of the Negev, in Jeter, in Aroer, in Siphmoth, in Estemoah, in Rechal, in the cities of Jeremelites, in the cities of the Kenites, in Hormai, in Borashan, in Athek, in Hebron, for all the places where David and his men had roped. Where he had been like Robin Hood and been protecting the land, what he did was he said, I'm sending this stuff to you guys. Because you have helped me out in the past when I've needed provisions, like when he went to Nabal and he was an idiot and Abigail helped him. But people had helped him in terms of that, and he was kind of like their guard. He was loyal to the people. It is the issue of God. Loyalty. Faithfulness. And so we're going to leave this here. This is the the side of the story with David as he goes into the world but comes to his senses and comes back. And next week, we're going to start looking at the desperation of Saul in chapter 28. And then what happens with Saul when he dies in battle in chapter 31. This is the other side of that story. This is what's happening at the same time David is going through some of the stuff that he's going through. And we'll leave it there, and we'll come back to this and look at the other side of this world, the king who lives by the flesh, in the next one. Let's pray. Lord, I ask that anything that is worthy of your name here, that is good for us, that we can apply to our lives, that you would give it to us and work it into our lives. Anything else, let it fall to the ground. In Jesus' name, amen.